Podcast family, I've said it many times before, and I'm going to say it now, and you know it's true. Come on. That we as people, as adults, as professionals, right, as healthcare providers, we can be kind of weird. Let me explain what I mean by a Instagram message that I received about 2 hours ago. Okay. Now, just to give you kind of context here, I'm recording this on the 24th of April. I just finished my day call at the hospital, and yep, that was a whole other experience because today was a doozy. But I may or may not get into that. But I'm just so thankful for a great team that's evidence-based. We all encourage each other because it was one of those days, okay? And our nursing staff is phenomenal. I mean, they do their due diligence. They do their part. And they really are patients' advocates. But man, we had some outcomes today. But I digress. So we had all that going on. And then I get a little ding on my Instagram. And so I take a look. And it's somebody who sends me a message with this paraphrase, okay? Hey, Dr. Chapa, I appreciate your work on the information about steroids, especially in the late preterm interval. I'm like, okay, so far, so good. I'm digging it. And then it says, but did you know, here it comes, right? So they put the little tee, the plastic tee into the dirt, and now they put the little golf ball on it, and here comes a swing. Get ready. And then the message goes on to say, did you know? That there was a publication that came out today, which, yes, I was aware of that, a publication that came out today in JAMA that said that the children from the ALPS trial did not have neurodevelopmental issues when they received steroids in the late preterm interval. In other words, your podcast where you said that late preterm steroid administration and altered neurodevelopmental issues seems to be wrong. Oh, to which my response was,
oh, no, you didn't.
No, really, that was my response on the inside. My real response was, yes, I'm very aware of that. Actually, Cynthia, who's the incoming president of SMFM, was the lead author on that. She is fantastic. And that authorship on that ALPS follow-up reads like a who's who of MFM. And I'll get into that in a minute. So I respect all of those authors. But I see you read the abstract. My question is, did you read the entire manuscript? Because the publication has some very important points here. So I decided to do this episode. So I responded back just as I just mentioned and said, rather than kind of doing this through text, I promise I'm going to get to an episode today covering this new publication from JAMA, the title of which is Neurodevelopmental Outcomes After Late Preterm Antenatal Corticosteroids, very fitting, the ALPS follow-up study. Because there's some very important stuff that we have to account for here and give credit to these authors, because they really did their due diligence on this. They did a great job for 6 to 7 years of follow-up with one big caveat. And we're going to discuss that. Plus, now that this was released on April the 24th officially, this was actually out ahead of print some weeks ago, and I already included this information and submitted it to the college as we're working on the antenatal corticosteroids practice bulletin and clinical practice guidance update, right? So yes, we knew that this was out. I knew that this was out. But you got to read the entire manuscript to look at one big piece of information here that says, interpret this with caution. And that's not my only opinion, because in this same release today on April the 24th, 2024, there was an editorial also from JAMA by Alex Vildoff, who stated very similar concerns to what I have already mentioned in previous episodes. We're going to cover this original publication and then the editorial, the commentary also in JAMA, also released today, April 24, 2024, by Alex Vildoff et al., raising the same concerns that we've already discussed, all right? But I thought this is too good to just send a quick text. I need to get this out because it is hot news today, and it kind of blurs some of the messages that have been coming out over the last really several years. That the general message, of course, is pump the brakes on late preterm steroids, and you've got a variety of countries already saying, we're not doing that. Too many questions, very little benefit, so we're out. We're just going to tap in, we throw in the towel, and we're out. So let's cover this brand new publication from JAMA from today, April 24, 2024, that is the 6 to 7 year follow-up of the original ALPS trial. Is this good news for late preterm steroids, or does it still leave questions remaining? Let's get to it right now. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls. Remember, of course, if I'm just throwing it out there, has not heard of the ALPS trial, you may know what the ALPS trial meant, but you may not know what ALPS means, even though we've covered that so many times here, like it's nauseating. The ALPS trial stands for Antenatal Late Preterm Steroids. It was published back in 2016, and it really changed the definition of when antenatal corticosteroids could be given just for a little tiny pinch of decrease in respiratory morbidity. And so it moved that needle from ending at 34 weeks, pushing it to 36 and 6, okay? So late preterm steroids was the ALPS trial. Again, not new to this channel. But this was a study that showed a 20% relative reduction in a primary outcome of respiratory morbidity in those that had steroids in the late preterm interval. So you think, hey, 20%, that's pretty good, right? Yeah, it is. But that 20% was mainly limited to a reduction in transient tachypnea of the newborn. It didn't change the need for mechanical ventilation. It did not have any reduction in intraventricular hemorrhage or in overall mortality, right? So those are big things. There was no difference. And late preterm steroids on mortality, severe respiratory distress, necrotizing enterocolitis, or intraventricular hemorrhage. Now remember, as we stated before, antenatal corticosteroids definitely do those things when it's administered very early on and the child delivers a preterm. But late preterm, that falls apart. The only thing that's a benefit here is an absolute reduction, not a relative reduction of 20%, but an absolute reduction of that primary outcome of respiratory morbidity, which was TTN, of about 2.8%. Okay, so those without steroids had about 14.4%, and it went down to 11.65% with late steroid administration. All to say, that was the big take home. And everybody was like, woohoo, hey, I'm in. 2.8% decrease in transient tachypnea of the newborn. Why not? Okay, now even in the ALPS trial, they figured out, yes, the main issue is neonatal hypoglycemia, but then all the other data started coming in, especially from overseas, that, this potentially could have some neurocognitive issues here in the long term, because that late preterm brain and early term brain, is very sensitive to steroids, especially at the doses that are being given here, mainly with neuronal cell migration and still in maturation. And so there are real issues here. This is why a variety of countries, as we've discussed many times before, have pulled back, all right? They're saying, hey, we're not going to do it, too many questions, and that's legitimate. That is absolutely true. That also includes, by the way, big organizations like the WHO, the International Federation of Gynecology and Obstetrics, that's FIGO, the World Association of Perinatal Medicine, Swiss, the Germans, the Austrians, the European Consensus Guidelines, guys, they've all pulled back. Even Canada has pulled back to say, nope, our upper limit for routine antenatal corticosteroids is 34 weeks. We're just going back to the good old days, okay? So there are a lot of people who've put the brakes on this. So what happened here with ALPS in 2016, Are all these countries wrong? Are they seeing something that's just not there? And the answer, of course, is no. I mean, there's plenty of observational and prospective and retrospective studies that have looked at this and like, yeah, you know what? There's potentially some issues here with neurocognitive development because it has to do with either a first hit or a second hit mechanism. And there's something with that priming, especially when they get exposed in the late preterm interval and then deliver at term. None of that should be new to us, right? We know that there's issues, pull back from it. But then comes this publication that came out today on April the 24th, 2024 in JAMA, okay? And I have to say that just right off the bat, because everybody here, this is like my go-to of big MFM mentors. Are you kidding me? It's Alan Tita. It's Cynthia Bannerman, who's the incoming president of SMFM. It is literally the who's who list of people in maternal fetal medicine. So I respect all of them. They're all absolutely gifted. And all of the work, George Sod, that's another one, George McCombs. I mean, come on, Dwight Rouse. All people that we've talked about in this podcast before. Sean Blackwell, for heaven's sakes. I mean, these are dinosaurs, and I mean that in a good way, pillars of maternal fetal medicine, with the first listed author being Cynthia Bannerman, the incoming president of SMFM. By the way, she also had a really nice little, her story of getting into maternal fetal medicine, her take on obstetrics on the SMFM on one of their little programs, educational programs, as the incoming president of SMFM. So all to say, this is a legitimate group of authors who put this out, and kudos to them for following up to this degree. I mean, because they followed up between really about 6 to 7 years or so, okay? And it's just not one site. It's the majority of the sites of ALPS. That was 13 centers that were part of the MFM units, okay? So this was a follow-up interval from the original cohort of those who had exposure to steroids in the late preterm, early term interval who completed two injections, right? Two injections, a typical cycle, one full course of 12 milligrams IM betamethasone twice, 24 hours apart. Of course, the main follow-up here is neurocognitive development, and they use the GCA score. That's the general conceptual ability score, where anything less than 85 got a mark. Okay. The secondary outcome, of course, included gross motor function, a social responsiveness, which is totally good. And then they even tried to adjust using multivariable analysis. So it's very, very well done with a very well-known scale called the GCA, the General Conceptual Ability Score. Okay. Here's one of the things, and as we already mentioned in the intro, their conclusion is what the message that was sent to me stated, quote, "In this follow-up study of this randomized clinical trial, administration of antenatal corticosteroids to persons at risk of late preterm delivery originally shown to improve short-term neonatal respiratory outcomes, but with an increased rate of hypoglycemia, was not associated with adverse childhood neurodevelopmental outcomes at age 6 years or older," end quote. All right, so that's what they found. And sounds good. And that's making its headlines. It's getting around. It will likely be in the ACOG, what's new in print, a little blurb that we get by email. Because this is causing a little bit of confusion with all of the other observational and prospective and retrospective data that's already been out there, okay? So the question is, well, were all those countries wrong? I mean, was FIGO wrong in stopping this when obviously the conclusion says there's no developmental issues? Yes, good. That's good info. But you've got to look at the numbers of this follow up, guys. Okay, so just listen to this. So of the 2,831 children, okay, so 2,831, 1,026 were enrolled, and 949 actually had evaluation at a median age of 7 years. Okay, so let me give you those numbers again. So 2,831 children, 2,831, 1,028 had contact for follow-up, and of those, 949 completed the evaluation. So this was basically half of those had betamethasone and the other half had placebo, okay? Median age, 7 years. So let's stop right there. When you do that math, guys, the amount lost to follow-up is about 63%. Now, it's not secret math. I mean, even my public school Texas education can figure this out. And it's also in the editorial. They're like, guys, it's over 60% loss of data. So what you have is reassuring. It's also incomplete. It's like less than 40% of the patient pool. Now, obviously, if there was something hugely off, you would think that you would see it. But to say that there was no significant adverse issue on neurodevelopment with over 62 to 63% of the initial cohort missing, it's kind of tough to say. And guys, this is not all my perspective, though. When I first read this and when it came out ahead of print, I mean, these are not secret things to figure out. These are easy to deduct from the publication, but it's the same message, the same things that are easy to pick out is what the commentary, the editorial in this same JAMA issue is called into question. Okay. So is this good news for those that were followed up? Absolutely. That's good that, you know, 38% of those who were followed up didn't seem to have a complication in the general conceptual ability score, as well as gross motor function. That's fantastic. But it still leaves a lot of question when over half are not accounted for. This is the basis of the discussion and the main points in the rebuttal to this in the editorial, again, in the same issue by Alex Vedef and Elizabeth Estelos. Okay, so these are the concerns here. The main one is, man, we've got just a lot of data that's unaccounted for, which gives an incomplete message. Second, we know from a variety of cumulative other data that high-dose steroids do affect the myelination and the neuronal maturation in the late preterm interval. That fetal brain is very susceptible because of the effect of those steroids on the oligodendrocytes that stuns them, especially in parts of the cortex and the cerebellum, all right? Very well published, and we've covered that before. But I like how these authors, editors, the commentators, what they put here in their rebuttal, in their editorial. To do it justice, I want to read you exactly what is in this editorial to do it justice, and then we'll bring this to a wrap because it's very targeted, right? We're covering the main publication and the editorial piece, and because we've covered this so much, but I did want to give a formal response to that one Instagram message because I think we all benefit from knowing this rather than just sending somebody a single message back. So the editorial response is, quote, "The 60% loss to follow-up in the Bannerman study is 50% higher than a previous Cochrane review and causes the study to be underpowered. Furthermore, loss to follow-up does not often occur completely at random." Here it is, guys. Listen to this. "It may be affected by the intervention and or outcome." In other words, hey, 60% missing, it's not like they're just lost to follow-up. There could be something there. Like they're like, no, I'm done with this. I'm walking away. That's kind of a flag. Okay, so you read between the lines or like, what's going on? That's concerning. They go on to say, "A large loss to follow-up compromises inferences, and analysis methods may not fully compensate for such missing data," end quote. In other words, multivariate analysis aside, you know, thank you for doing that, you're missing 60% some odd of the data. So that's huge. They go on to say, quote, "The report by Bannerman et al. Provides data on midterm outcomes of neurodevelopment, but does not address the long-term effects of finer measures like school performance scores or the consequence of increased cortical reactivity. It cannot be taken for granted that the outcomes of finer measures will necessarily follow those reported for gross deviations from normal," end quote. What does that mean? They're like, hey, big motor things, like, hey, he's not tripping over himself when he walks. That's great. And he can bring a spoon from this food to his mouth. That's great. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it, but you get what I'm saying. Those are gross motor functions. They're like, there's finer perturbations here, a more finer control that wasn't really assessed and show up later on. All to say, this editorial is very respectful of these leaders in maternal fetal medicine. They're like, great job. Thank you for looking into this. But then their last statement, which I'm going to read to you all here in just a minute, states, we still have a lot of concerns, guys, okay? So as they wrap up their editorial, they leave us with this message, quote, "It remains to be seen if this report by Jomfy Bannerman et al. Will be perceived as sufficiently reassuring to reverse the current limited uptake of late preterm antenatal corticosteroids, either internationally or within the U.S." End quote. In other words, the CHOPPA paraphrase is, okay, I get it. Thanks for wrapping this up at 6 to 7 years, medium of 7 years. Meh. I mean, I don't know. I mean, countries have pulled away. Is it too late? Is it a little too late? Is it a day short? What is that? A dollar short and a day late? Or is it the reverse? A dollar short and a day late? I don't know. Whatever. You get what I'm saying. The idea is this is good info to know. Did the ship already get anchored? Is the ship not sailing anymore? I don't know. Like I said, this whole new revision of antenatal corticosteroids by the college just got launched. And of course, Cynthia is going to be asked to review this once the initial draft is done, as president of SMFM and as part of the ALPS trial, because the big focus on this, even though there's a lot of stuff in there, like is the dose correct? What's the best interval? We don't really know. Maybe we're giving super physiological dosages. We've covered that before. And then we're going to talk about the big chunk of the new rewrite, of course, focuses on the two extremes, right? Giving it earlier on, which was a separate practice advisory, and then maybe not giving it later on in late preterm, early term. But all of this was birthed, no pun intended, out of one Instagram message, and I hope I did it its justice. So to that message that came in and said, hey, didn't look like there was any problems. Truth is, no, there wasn't. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what the conclusion states. However, if you pull out the rest of the data and look at the picture holistically, like countries are saying, yeah, thank you for that. We're done. And while you're missing, 62-ish percent of the data, it's interesting, but maybe not enough to restart the ship back on its journey. Podcast family, and the last thing I want to say is, look, this rewrite of the clinical practice guidance, I don't know which way it's going to go. I mean, I wrote verbosely, okay, because I'm so passionate about this. I think, wow, maybe we should learn from this. And so I've turned in my whatever it is, like 17 pages. And then my co-author on this from the NIH is going to do her part and change it, edit it, whatever. And then it goes to Cynthia through SMFM to get her perspective on it. So it's going to take a while. Then it's got to go to committee. It's got to get voted on. So the whole point is ACOG going to say, yeah, too many questions remain. What we have is okay, but there's more unsures than what's okay. So we're going to say use as shared decision making or not at all. I don't know. I can't say. I don't want to speak for the entire committee because it has to go to the entire committee for vote. But something is happening. I don't suspect it's just going to go much to do about nothing, guys. There's nothing here. Keep doing what you're doing. There's way, way too much momentum to do that. Okay, so I know it likely won't do that. How it changes from complete avoidance in the late preterm, early term to shared decision making still has to be seen. I am kind of leaning with it's going to go away. I believe that's the vibe. Okay, too many questions remain. So, but I don't want to speak. I want to be very clear. I don't want to say that that's what's going on. That's my vote. That's what I opted for, but it has to go to my co-author, it has to go to SMFM, it has to go through ACOG Clinical Practice Committee, and then through vote. So we shall see. We shall see. All right. Anyway, I hope you found this helpful. Again, the reference is from JAMA, both the original article and the editorial. Okay. Whew. Let's bring it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.